Welcome to the Mud Island Adventures podcast. I'm your host, Garrick McMullen, and I'm here to help you find your adventure right here in the UK. Hello, ho, 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 and welcome to the special Christmas edition of the Mud Island Adventures podcast. As ever, I'm here with Lee. Lee, how are you, mate? Are you well?
I am well, my friend. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm just, just chilling. I've been wrapping presents today and getting all Christmassy and been spending the last couple of days just trying to rack my brains of what to do with this bloody elf on a shelf.
Oh, no, man. Yeah.
A lot of people will be...
Well, you've only got one, because there's at least four, okay, that haunt the house and sort of move around and stuff, and it's quite disturbing. It's nothing to do with me, I promise you. But now trees up, all that. I've got all my presents wrapped.
Oh, lovely.
All sorted. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel
trying to stay ahead of the game.
We're just about there before we head off to see family for Christmas. So it's going to be a Christmas period of hopefully some boating and dips in the ocean and, oh, lovely beach runs and whatever.
Yeah, wonderful stuff.
And probably a few mince pies and some drinking.
Yes, maybe sort of squeeze those in between all the other activities.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that at all, especially this time of year.
No, I don't think so. I'm looking forward to putting on a couple of extra kilos.
Yeah. Winter insulation.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm going. So we're planning at the moment to go swimming on Boxing Day and New Year's Day.
North Sea. Yeah, I'm going to say that North Sea is not warm at the best of times, but that's the time of year you want to be.
So I reckon I'm going to need all the lardular insulation I can get.
More pies, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely more pies, yeah. Hot toddies all round.
Yes.
Ooh. Happy days. Well, people, we thought we'd get together before Christmas and just have a chat with you all and maybe throw a couple of ideas your way if you haven't already sorted out your Christmas shopping. Apologies, we haven't been around for a little while. It's been a manic few months for both of us in terms of work and personal life. So we kind of just let things slide for a little while and, you know, thought we'd get ourselves back on an even keel before we start again, but we couldn't leave 2021 without saying goodbye to you and wishing you all a very Merry Christmas. We've got a few things lined up in this show. It might be a long one, but got some extra rum.
That's all right.
We've got a couple of things. So one of the things we thought we'd do with this podcast is. We felt it was time that we introduced ourselves a bit more. And rather than just waffle on about ourselves, we kind of figured that we were going to sort of do a bit of an interview with each other, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We thought that was a great idea, just to sort of bounce questions off of one another and sort of see what we come up with. Obviously, Garrick and I, you know, that we have known each other for a long time now, possibly longer than we already want to do the maths on. But for those of you who don't know us so well, we thought this would be an insight into the Mud Island Adventures boardroom and give you a little bit of an introduction into our backgrounds. We've talked a lot about the activities that we've done and we're going to sort of fill in some of the blanks. So that's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's not a bad place to start. So, I'm going to kick it off, Lee. Obviously, at this stage, I've known you for half my life.
Yes.
Now,
I know we're going to do maths, but carry on.
I know you can't quite claim that, can you?
No, I cannot.
But I can, because I'm a bit young. The first thing I was going to ask, Lee, is obviously you're an adventurous kind of guy by nature. And what sort of sparked your early adventurous side? What was the catalyst in young Lee's life that sparked this sense of adventure, do you think?
I mean, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s as a child and a teenager, you've got all the usual sort of movie icons like Indiana Jones. You know, there's lots of sort of TV shows like MacGyver and the A-Team and all that kind of stuff. But for me, a lot of it was reading. It was actually reading that got me outside. It's rather ironic. But there is something about losing yourself in an adventure in a book that, for me, inspired me, once I'd finished the book, was to go out and find my own. So really, it was books like Swallows and Amazons that we've covered on the show before.
Yeah.
Wind in the Willows. You know, these sort of classic children's stories, which coupled with the TV and movie shows and everything that I was watching, really sort of sparked that desire to get out and to see what was out there and to experience more that was in my world. Growing up in rural Lincolnshire, there's surfing did not happen, and no mountains either. So inevitably, it was going to be a case of, well, if I want to go and explore these things, then I need to leave and move on. But yeah, the original spark really came from the combination of, you know, those the media that we had growing up, the books that I was reading, and I guess my own imagination.
Nice. So what was your, what would you say your earliest adventure was?
I guess probably about sort of, 7 years old. My big cousin Dave, he'd come over and spent the summer with us. And in the field opposite the house, there was this, to 7-year-old me, it was quite a big pond and there's little trees all around it. And somebody had rigged up this rope swing. Right. And this rope swing had been there for a while. And so we all, you know, a lot of fun swinging off that and coming back to the land, swinging back and taking turns. And then it was like the Tarzan movies, you know, because you're swinging out over the water. Like the old Johnny Weissmuller movies, it's kind of like that. No crocodiles in Lincolnshire, although I have to say, that I knew of anyway. But no, is that that was, you know, a real sort of adventurous sort of thing to do in rural Lincolnshire in the 70s. And that's really the first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, there we go. You see, it's the little things, isn't it, that spark that adventure, I think.
Yeah, it gets that adrenaline coursing. In some way, and you know, when you're 7 years old and you're swinging out over water, I mean, when you're 7 years old, you're basically walking adrenaline anyway. But to do something like that, or the first time that you ride your bike or your skateboard or anything like that, that spark, that little sort of oof, that get up and go that just sort of comes out of nowhere is that adrenaline, and you get to start to like it, and then it's the Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that adrenaline is a gateway drug, isn't it, really?
To more adrenaline.
Yeah, to more adrenaline, exactly. Yeah, you know, to bigger and bolder things. So from, you know, riding skateboards, as I sort of grew up, we eventually got to riding surfboards. I think you're pretty much the same, weren't you?
Back in the room. So, you know, the growing up in rural Lincolnshire, now I know I'm cheating a little bit here, but talk to me about your love of flight.
So this house that I grew up in, it was on a direct line in between two of the big airfields of RAF Lincolnshire, RAF Binbrook and RAF Scampton. Now at Scampton, you had the big Vulcan bombers. Mm-hmm. And at Binbrook, you had the old Lightnings, the interceptors. And, you know, this is what filled the skies. It was these fast-moving aircraft. The Vulcan, when it flies, it's spectacular. It's beautiful. It just defies gravity. In an almost ethereal kind of way. It doesn't look like it should fly, but there it is. It's just, and wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And the Lightnings as well. You know, they in those days, there was a little bit more leeway, shall we say, for the RAF to do low-flying activities. So yeah, those guys would come in low and they would come in fast, and oftentimes you would hear the noise but you would never see it. And so, you know, growing up with that overhead on a daily basis, and every Saturday we'd sort of we'd drive out to do the grocery shopping, and we'd drive past the gate of RAF Scampton. And the gate guard there was an old Avro Lancaster. Now, spin forward many years, it was replaced by another aircraft. It was sold to a collector in the United States. Then a few years ago, it came back to the UK. And when you look at my on my Facebook, you'll see me and my dad in the cockpit of this Lancaster.
Yeah.
It's the very same Lancaster.
Oh, man.
Right? And that's at East Kirkby. Just Jane is at East Kirkby. So it's not just the, you know, the fast air of the time that was sort of growing up. It was also the, you know, the warbirds of the Second World War. And, you know, the beautiful aeroplanes such as the Spitfire and the Hurricane, the Lancaster, of course, the Mosquito. So, and of course, the American aircraft like the Mustang, Corsair. All these fantastic aircraft. It really just made me want to get up there and fly things, you know? And maybe a few sort of reruns of watching Star Wars as well might have had an influence.
Bit of Airwolf.
Mm.
Maybe some Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Tales of the Gold Monkey, yeah. There we go. Now we asked, yeah. You are the only other person who I know who's actually remembered that show.
Honestly, I saw it a little while ago. It's
not as good. It's
not as good as I remember. No. So I'm just going to leave it in my memory bank and delete what I saw. You took up flying at quite a young age, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was actually, I actually started flying before I started to learn to drive or even have a motorcycle. So I was about 15 and a half, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next sort of, you know, couple of years until I sort of turned 17, I would periodically have these flying lessons, sort of, you know, birthday money, Christmas money, savings and what have you. And then 17th birthday, I got to go solo. And that was the only sort of reason that it sort of took so long, was that I legally had to be 17 years old before I could a solo in an aircraft. So that's probably one of the proudest things that I've done. I mean, we won't talk about my GCSE scores at this point, but
couldn't buy a beer, but you could fly an aeroplane.
Yeah, exactly. which, you know, that's kind of my salutation to a lot of those, you know, World War II pilots and stuff. Very similar, very young. Probably couldn't get served in a bar, but yes, they could fly aircraft.
Yeah.
And that's about all we have in common. But the love of it, going down there to the airfield in early on a Saturday morning, getting the aircraft out, opening up the hangars, doing the pre-flight checks, you know, doing the flight plans and the route planning and everything. It's just, yeah, it's not what your average teenager does, is it? But
no.
It's something that I absolutely loved. And like I say, I put a lot more effort into that than I did my schoolwork.
I blame you. I think had the opportunity arisen, I'd have taken more time to do that. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, it was a real privilege. You know, that's one of the things we used to sort of say at Lincoln Aero Club. It was I'm going to exercise the privileges of my license.
Mm.
And I just love that phrase because it really is a privilege. And you know this from the paragliding that you've done. And anyone who is, is taken to the air in any capacity, it really is a privilege to take something aloft and see the world from above. And I got to share that with my nan, which was really great. I think that was her 80th birthday. So I got, and she'd never flown before, but so I got to take her up and she could see the place that she'd lived her whole life from the air for the first time. So that's what I mean, you know, when I say it was a privilege, I got to share something like that with someone really important. And when we come to, you know, any of these adventures, I think that, you know, it's that sharing the experience that really makes the difference, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I must admit, it's a lot of these things I enjoy, you know, a lot of the adventurous stuff. I quite enjoy some of the solitude.
Yes. Yeah.
But so, there's... yeah, but at the same time, there's something really special about sharing a wave with somebody.
Mm.
Or, you know, going on a bike, you know, having a bike adventure, or, you know, anything, thermaling,
yeah,
a paraglider, wingtip to wingtip with somebody, is, you know, it's just really cool. And I love the fact that these sports that we do, we can either do them solo a lot of the time, and enjoy that solitude and have your thinking space.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, you can share the adventure.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. Pretty special too.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
Mm, nice. So, I mean, you went on from flying, and then obviously we talked about scuba diving on yes. As part of the podcast, but I mean, Lincolnshire is not really well known for scuba,
no, it's
is
not.
It?
Not really. It's not exactly a hot spot. So again, this, you know, this leads me back to what I was saying about, you know, these activities like surfing, diving, and everything. Bent eventually, I was going to have to leave. So what I ended up doing with diving was took an intensive sort of series of courses,
mm-hmm.
Through the PADI system,
mm-hmm.
and ended up as an. Now, in between, yeah, you've got to do your minimum standard of dives before you can accelerate through all this sort of system. But, you know, there's no skipping. You have to successfully have completed each course. So it's a progressive thing. It's not like intensive driving. You just build on that knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I did, and ended up becoming an instructor. I did my instructor development course out in Malta, which was spectacular. That was really good, you know, diving the Med for the first time.
Yeah.
Having been used to UK waters where, 4 meters of visibility is a good day. And, you know, going out to Malta, and it was like diving into a martini.
Yeah.
And in a wetsuit as well, as opposed to a dry suit. So that made a world of difference. You know, I think I've mentioned this in the podcast, but I'm so glad I did it that way around. Because I've had students later on where they had done their initial open water diver course overseas in warm waters and then come to the UK. And, yeah, they got a bit of a shock, and it wasn't just from the cold either.
Admittedly. Joe and I, when we did ours, our first... so my first dive was out in Brac. Sorry, in just off the Croatian coast, a small island called Brac.
Yeah.
I mean, we were only a few meters down. You could easily free dive it, but you know, it was crystal clear. It was warm and it was lovely. And then Joe and I, when we did our first proper tri dive, that was out in Mauritius when we got married. So of course, the Indian Ocean is quite a, you know.
Quite
a luxurious place to dive, shall we say. Lots to see, and you can see it, and you're not shivering.
no, exactly.
So, it's when we later on in our sort of dive timeline started diving in the UK in places like Vobster Key and off the coast of Cornwall, it's a bit of a shock to the system, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just really glad that somebody decided to invent dry suits at that point.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They do make the world of difference over here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, your this little sense of adventure you've got has led you around quite a bit, hasn't it?
Excuse me.
Oh, God, it's not COVID, is it?
I've
just had my third jab today, so
I'm still need to organise that. So maybe it is. I don't know. No, I am just sorry, that just went down the wrong way. Apologies.
Okay, let's keep it family. Mm. Right.
Yep, carry on.
Your sense of adventure then sort of led you, as we've discussed before, down to Newquay, that after Oban and
yeah,
working as a dive instructor.
Yeah.
So I mean, what keeps that fire fueled for you? What is it that, you know, if is it the thought of finding somewhere new to explore, or a new activity? What is it that drives your sense of adventure?
I think a little of both. I do enjoy learning new things, mm-hmm. but also I like to learn more about the things that I already do. So going around and, you know, visiting new places, learning new skills, that's great, and it has mm-hmm. its place. But I think that what is also important is that if you really enjoy something, you know, and you make the effort to get out there and do it, and it's particularly if we're talking about something like surfing, it is one of those sports that you will never stop learning. There are guys, you know, who've surfed way more than us and for a lot longer than us, almost on a daily basis. And if you ask them and they're perfectly honest, they will tell you, yep, I learned something just last week.
Mm.
So
I think that's the beauty of like a lot of the sports that we've pursued, or a lot of the activities that we've pursued, there's no way that you can, I mean, you can become excellent, you know, a real master in your field, at everything, or at something that you do. So, you know, a climber, the best climbers in the world are absolutely honed to near perfection in terms of what they do.
Yes.
But even they fall from time to time.
Exactly.
You know, or they'll find a route that they can't do. And it's just, yeah, you know, there's always that that sort of ability to be able to find something that absolutely challenges you. I'm not going to take a dig at footballers here. That'd be too easy.
Yeah.
Football, I get it. I do get it. I understand that it's, you know, it's like a lot of team sports. It doesn't really float my boat. But I can understand the skill and the precision involved in doing that. But you play 90 minutes of football. You've played 90 minutes of football. That's okay. You know, apart from a rough tackle, you're probably going to be all right. Whereas, you know, somebody who is kayaking down a grade 5 rapid in, you know, in deepest, darkest Africa, you know, every time they do that, there's the possibility they're not coming out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, that's the really extreme end of this scale. But at the same time, you know, there's always new stuff to find and do. And that, I think that's what the adventure side of things really brings out in us.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And when it comes to, like, you know, the mainstream sports as well as the activities that we enjoy, when you see that on the TV, whether that's in a documentary or if you're watching a championship game or something like that, whatever it might be, you are seeing people who live and breathe that activity, that sport, all day, every day, and have done for years.
Hmm.
And they make it look easy because it's their job. It's what they do.
Yeah.
But as Garrick says, they still make mistakes.
Yeah.
They will still not ever serve a perfect game, or they will not, nobody's going to surf the ideal perfect way. There is always something to learn. So even at that very high level, mistakes still get made because we're still human.
Yeah.
And that's a real sort of factor when it comes to, you know, the adventures that we participate in, is that realization that, yeah, I'm not an expert at this. It's fun. And that's my big takeaway. it's fun. I'm enjoying it. But I'm not an expert. So that's okay. I can learn new things and I can make mistakes doing so.
So, Lee.
Yes.
Have you ever eaten seagull?
No. Should I have?
Okay.
Was that was something I should have done before we started recording? Or?
I was just checking, really.
Oh, okay, got you.
So, have you eaten a seagull? And if not, what do you think it would taste like?
Seabird flavour.
Is that a Walker's crisp special, is it?
I think it was more of a Monty Python, but yes, I honestly think it would be quite salty.
Sort of like a salty chicken.
Possibly, yeah. You know, if you oversalt your chicken, that could be a fairly similar taste. I'm going to leave that to my imagination. And it's not something I want to be in where I'm being served seagull. Thank you very much. But you never know.
Well, yeah, this is it. I imagine an albatross is probably a better feed.
Yeah, certainly if you've got a big group coming round.
Yeah, yeah. Not sure I recommend it for Christmas roast, though.
No, probably stick with the traditional turkey.
Yeah, definitely not as salty. I don't know where this is going. It's fucking
I think we just need to move on.
Then let's do that.
So, let me give you some questions. I'm going to add in a couple little things here for you, okay, because I'm like that. I'm going to give you, as well as answering the question, I'm going to give you the options to pass, bounce, or quote. So, pass is a standard pass. Mm-hmm. You can bounce the question back to me if you choose.
Ooh.
Or you can reply with a quote. Doesn't matter who by. But the more obscure, the better. You can only play these once, and I'm going to keep a tally if this is what you do. Now, like I say, it's not compulsory.
Yeah.
But they are there as options if you want to play that game.
All right.
All right. So I'll start you off with something nice and easy. What is your never leave home without it tool? What is it you always take with you? Doesn't matter where you're going. Whether it's to the shops or out on an adventure, what do you always have with you?
I have always got, and do you know what? It was something that Joe introduced to me years and years ago, and I've been through loads of them. And what I carry is a Victorinox Swiss Army card.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you've seen them. It's like it's a credit card sized multi-tool.
Yep.
Flat. It's got a pair of scissors and a nail file and a little knife.
Yeah, very cool. Yep.
And I've always got that in my wallet now.
Cool.
It's one of those things you think, I'll probably never use that. And before you know it, it's always getting used. And the most, I think, random time I ever used it was we went to a wedding. And up in Kingston on Thames for one of Joe's friends, and they came to cut the cake. We haven't got a knife to cut the cake with.
Victorinox card, that'll be nice.
And I mean, this blade is like an inch and a bit long. It's not what you'd normally choose to cut a cake with. But as it was, that came out. And I was like, I've got this. I don't know if it's any use. And that's what they used to cut the cake.
Oh, brilliant.
I let them keep it, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, a memorable moment, isn't it?
Yeah. you keep that. It's covered in cake now. but yeah, it was good cake too. And a bloody good wedding. No matter where I'm going, that is what I will take with me. Other than that, if on a larger scale, one thing I won't sort of go on any adventure without is a first aid kit.
Yeah. Yes. Always better have and not need than need and not have.
Absolutely. And do you know what's more important than having a first aid kit?
Knowing how to use it.
Correctamundo. Yes. So there we are.
All right. So I want you to imagine that for some reason they're making the movie. They're making the movie of your life. Who's playing you? Who would you like to see cast?
I don't know. I suppose they would have to be a sort of series of people, wouldn't it, to cover through the ages? Unless, I mean, you could use CGI nowadays, and
you could. I mean, you know, if we're talking about fantastic premises, then you know you kind of always pick someone, you know, from Hollywood's bygone age, if that's probably more suitable.
No, I think so the later years would have to be Harrison Ford, I think.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, later than now, I suppose if we could rewind him to our age now.
Yeah, that would put him sort of, 80s, wouldn't it? Indiana Jones phase, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I quite like that. That would be quite cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with...
You're going to go with that. Ford.
I'd like to say, but if we round it back as far as, mid-teens, I don't know. I say late teens, maybe Tom Holland.
Okay.
I think he's quite cool. He's quite... ditzy as well. I think it's quite funny. Sort of 20s and 30s, I think Henry Cavill could probably fill that role quite well. We share a similar physique and the chiseled jawline.
Jo's holding up cards in the background, isn't she? She's going, say this one. Okay.
If it was down to her, it would be Foxy from the SAS. But
okay,
yeah, there we go.
So, okay. So, what do you reckon you'd be doing if you hadn't actually joined the army?
Oh Christ, what would I be doing? I don't know. So obviously, when immediately before. You and I joined the forces. We were down in Newquay and we were ran the hotel for the season, etc. And I wonder if maybe I'd have turned all that away and maybe gone back to looking at acting again. I don't know.
Okay.
It's one of those things that crossed my mind from time to time.
Yeah.
I think, maybe I could go back and do that. And then I realise that I can't.
Okay.
I think I'd have probably given that another stab. Cool. The reality is more likely that I'd have ended up somewhere in the leisure industry. So when I joined the army, I only joined for, to do a few years, have a couple of adventures, get some outdoor pursuits qualifications. So I think, probably I'd have sort of gone into teaching outdoor pursuits.
Yeah.
I probably ended up in management on that side of things. Which is a really boring and sensible answer, I know.
It is, but I like the acting thing as well. That's also a good answer. I like
that. Yeah, never say never.
No, exactly. I've also been told I should be on the stage.
Sweeping it,
yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm very aware now that I haven't used my, not snog, marry, avoid, the other one. The
pass, bounce, or quote.
So come on, hit me with the next one.
All right. Okay. I'm going to ask you, what should everyone do at least once?
Oh.
it's just coming out of left field for you, isn't it?
What should everybody do at least once? There's a lot of things, I think, that if you you could say you've got to do this once. You've got to do it once. And it's a lot of those things are things that I thought, I've got to try this once, and then I've ended up doing it loads. Yeah. Because being the sort of almost addictive person, addictive personality that I have, I'm kind of like, oh, that was fun. Let's do it again.
Yes, I can relate.
Yeah. What's that? Oh, throw myself out of an aeroplane. Yeah, I'll do that again. So I don't know. What everybody should do, whether it's once or numerous times, is follow a dream.
Okay.
And I think that is, there's no specific, because you can't tailor it. Everybody must go
and do
tobogganing. Yes. do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. But everybody, I think, should follow a dream at some point in their life.
I like that. That is a good answer. That is profound. And that's exactly, you've got 15 points now for that one. I'm just going to note that down. Good. Okay.
All right.
So let's see. It's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a galaxy far, far away.
Oof.
What ship are you flying from Yavin 4 to the Death Star for that attack? Sub question, what have you got cranked to 11 on the 8-track that's in the cockpit?
Oh, man, that's a double bubble, isn't it?
I know.
That's a two-pronged question right there that needs some thought. So, it's got to be the Millennium Falcon.
Okay.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be the Falcon, because if you're not cool enough to be flying the Falcon, whether you're Han Solo or Lando Calrissian, then what's the point, really? Rack to 11 has... Oh. It depends on the mood, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your mood is, you're flying the Falcon down that Death Star trench. You're about to take out Vader and his two wingmen. What you listening to?
Thunderstruck.
Okay. Oh. Yes, Abbott.
Yeah, there it is.
Good.
That's it. Enough. Just put myself up. I was clipping the radar off the port side right there. somebody's going to go and watch it and check to see if that actually happened.
Yeah.
No, probably you.
okay. The next question is only two words, but it's two words that every reader dreads. Favorite book. We're talking, Desert Island Disc style, right? Favorite book.
There's a book that recently has got me through. I say recently, I mean in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Has it been 4 years since it was released? I think it probably has, just about. And one that just really resonates with me, and it is, I don't agree with all the themes in it, and I don't follow the David Goggins sort of mantra all the time, because it's not in my nature, and that's not what I want to do. I don't want to achieve that. That's not my thing. But there's some real elements in that that just make me think, do you know what, if you want it, you can do it.
Yes.
And if Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins has been an absolute eye-opener. and it's the one book in the last few years that I've read over and over.
Yeah.
I still haven't done what he's told me to do. If he ever hears this, he's probably going to hunt me down.
Yeah, you don't want him happy, do you?
So in terms of non-fiction, that's, can I have two? Is that all right? Can I have a non-fiction and a fiction?
All right, reader to reader, yes, you can have two.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because it's not fair just having one,
no,
is it?
It's not fair. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You get it. That's right. So non-fiction, I really do love that book, and I think the, you know, if you're feeling like skipping the run, or, you know, I can dig into that and it will just bring my motivations back up again. But in terms of non-fiction, I'll be really honest with you right now. I think the Just So stories, probably which sounds like a random one, and it is, you know, at the end of the day, it's a kid's book. But it's, you know, the way it gives the fables and the, you know, just sort of tries to explain how the world, the world is the way, how things came to be. I love the fantasy of it. and it's something that I've been reading to my son for over the last year or so, just the odd story here or there. Yeah. And he really enjoys it. I really enjoy reading it, just because the flow of the language is beautiful. And just the tone is epic. So, yeah, there we go.
Those stories are fantastic. You know, we'd read them to Jack as well. And did you know, and this might be useful for you for long car journeys, especially if you are on your way to Essex for Christmas, but you can get the Just So stories narrated by Johnny Morris.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who are, you know, might be slightly younger than Garrick and I, you might be wondering who Johnny Morris was. Well, he was a TV presenter and he was a naturalist, mostly for kids' shows during the sort of 70s and 80s, and he used to do all these fantastic voices, didn't he? He used to impersonate all the animals and, you know, and speak. He really gave, you know, anthropomorphism a different sort of element as a child, where you've got these images of these animals and he would adopt a voice which would sound as though that animal was actually speaking. And you have obviously also got very fond memories of the shows and stuff as a kid. But yeah, he narrated the Just So stories. So if you're looking for something on your road trip with the family next week, get some of that as well.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Have you got any more questions?
I might.
Oh. Volume we one. Do one more and then we'll get into something a little less boring for the listener.
Okay. In that case, I'll just make it nice and simple. We're getting takeout, rice or noodles?
Oh, man.
Rice or noodles, Michael?
it's just rice. I think it's got to be rice for me.
Okay.
Which I know because noodles are the sort of food that really only goes with Chinese food.
Yep. But with rice, you've got a bit more versatility. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from. I like that.
Absolutely. Happy days. Yeah. Excellent. Well, hopefully that wasn't too dull for listeners. And gives an insight into the psyche of us here in the ivory tower of Mud Island Adventures, coming live in your ears. Treehouse, yeah. Well, it's an ivory treehouse. It's big.
Okay, all right.
Big fucking treehouse. Cool.
Yeah.
So, Happy days. Right. So, Lee, it's nearly Christmas, man.
I know.
Can you believe it? It's nearly Christmas. I can't, where's this year gone? I don't know. Have you got all your presents sorted out?
I do, mate. I do. I've got more wrapped. They're sitting under the tree. I'm good. I'm all squared away. You know, not to be bragging or anything, but I am. So, I mean, you know, to be fair, it's a short list, but you know, it's completed. So, I feel I've got that right.
Excellent. So, for those of you that haven't quite set your letters to Santa just yet, we've got some ideas that might help you decide what should be what you should find in your stocking on Christmas morning. So, Lee and I have been having a little think about this, and it's some of the things that we a little bit of a wish list in some ways. Some of it is stuff that we've used and we really enjoy using. But yeah, let's talk about some stocking fillers.
Yeah, let's
kick us off.
All right. Well, like you say, there's lots of things. I mean, one of the things that you've already discussed with the with your everyday carry, what you don't leave home without, and that's some kind of multi-tool. Right. I have got collections of multi-tools and pocket knives and all that kind of stuff, okay, because I love those things. I love the little gadgets, the way they fold, and they're just, yeah, there's just this appeal on a very sensory level of like, oh, wow, this is a great thing to explore, and a tactile level of the heft of it and everything, but there is just nothing that is unappealing about a multi-tool. So any kind of multi-tool or useful thing like that, it's a great little stocking filler, and you can keep it in the glove box, you can keep it in your backpack, you can keep it in your pocket, and it's always going to be useful. So
yeah,
that's my first my first go-to there with a stocking filler.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't have to be massively expensive either. You can spend a reasonable amount of money on some kind of tool as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, my wife spends money on a tool every year.
And what does she get you, mate?
I'm glad you followed the train of thought there.
Yeah, I'm on board.
But like Lee says, you know, the I carry the Victorinox card everywhere I go. It's always in my wallet, and it is invaluable. If you feel like you want something a bit bigger, you know, a Leatherman's or a Gerber or Victorinox, something else, is always useful. There's always a use for it somewhere. Just be careful with the legalities of carrying a blade.
Yes.
Is what I will say.
There is basically, as a rule of thumb, UK legal carry, and by all means, you know, go and look at this up on the government website. To the best of my knowledge, legal carry for any kind of folding blade in the UK, it's got to be less than 3.5 inches, so that's about 7.6 centimeters. It cannot be opened with one hand, and it will not lock into position. That's for generally for carry. Now, here's the thing. You can own a knife which locks into position and can be opened in one hand, but only in an environment where that is likely to be a life-saving tool. So that would be a climbing pitch,
yeah,
or a sailboat or some other environment where you're likely, or as a possibility for entrapment and only having one free hand and being able to cut yourself free. But again, that's only in that environment. Don't carry it to the supermarket, folks, please don't. That would be a bad idea. But
yeah,
for other things, you know,
unless you've kayaked to the supermarket and it's on your buoyancy aid,
yes,
that's exactly. Probably okay, although yes. I'd probably tuck it in a pocket anyway.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, look that stuff up, folks, don't get caught out. They are a fantastic piece of kit to have, but again, like Garrick says, there are legal issues about carrying anything sharp these days. Anywhere.
Yeah, well, it's true. My wit is registered as a lethal weapon. That's how sharp it is. And moving swiftly on. The next thing we talked about is actually something I talked about because Lee hates this idea of cycling at all. And I'm sure that cycling indoors and going fucking nowhere makes it even worse for you. But bear with me, people. Bear with me. So I've recently invested in an indoor trainer, a smart trainer. And I've got to say, I'm sold. I'm pretty hooked. With the nights growing ever longer, only for the next 5 days, actually, they're going to start getting shorter again after that. it's been a pretty in terms of bike training, it's been pretty dry. So we've always used treadmills in the winter and rowing machines, etc. And I have in the past used turbo trainers, but I've got to say, smart trainers, mate. Honestly, what a gift to humanity, really? Or to cycling humanity anyway. And the beauty of it is that, rather than just sitting on a bike trainer now and pedaling away and watching your heart rate for, an hour and going, okay, I've done an hour on a bike and now my gooch is sore. We can now socialize online and play games on a bike trainer.
You can socialize?
Is
it compulsory?
As socially inept as I am, yes. even I can do that. I recently invested in a Tax Flux 2, which is a direct drive trainer, which means that you take the back wheel off and then you put the bike onto the trainer and it just basically replaces your back wheel. But it connects to a tablet or Apple TV, and you can go on one of the training apps or the partnering software that goes with it. Currently, I'm using a system called Zwift. I've been introduced to that by the guy that I went and did the King Alfred's Way with back in the summer. He's convinced me, and it definitely works. So. Great stuff, and there's some really good deals on them at the moment. I guess the lower end is probably around about the 350 mark, and you can go, if you get an actual bike trainer, so it's that it looks like a bike erg that you'd find in the gym. So what bike make them? Wahoo make them. Couple of other tacks make them as well, and they can go up to sort of £2,000, which it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's not going in my stocking for sure.
But for around about £500, you can get yourself a pretty decent direct drive trainer that you just take the back wheel off your bike and plonk it on the trainer, and you're good to go. And it'll do your power. It'll do. Revolutions per minute, and you can actually do some really good structured training. So through the dark hours of the winter, rather than going out and getting freezing cold for the sake of a training ride, if that's your thing, hit it up. And who knows, you might get into the social aspect as well. Socializing.
No, that does sound like a fantastic bit of kit, actually, because £500, sure, that's a lot of money relatively, but as a long-term investment, not just for your training and everything, but in terms of a long-term investment for your health, it does get it's just this sort of time of year, and it's easy. We'll talk about that in a little while, but it is very easy at this time of year to let training start to slide. So if you've got something like that in the home, what an ideal opportunity. You can do that while. I would actually sit there and do something like that, watching the TV.
See, my home's not big enough. It's actually in the shed.
Oh, okay.
So I have to sit and stare at the lawnmower.
Well, to be fair, what a lot, what's on TV a lot these days. I mean, the lawnmower is probably my companion. To be
fair. Brilliant stuff. Cool. So what's next on your Santa's nice list?
Well, Which one? Let's see. Okay, you know, I'm just going to go for this one. I was looking today, and I just remember the last time we went camping. And these days, of course, you know, we've all got, we've got phones, we've got satellite navigation systems, we've got everything. Everything runs off of power, which is great when you're coming home and you can plug stuff in, or if you're driving and you can plug stuff in and charge it while you're driving. But if you're not in that urban environment, if you're out in the wilds, I've noticed a definite lack of 3-pin sockets, haven't you? Rocks don't tend to come with them, neither do trees.
I do remember instructors in training trying to tell us that we could plug into the tree. And not having just emerged from my mother's womb, I didn't fall for that one. Or having fallen out of said tree minutes earlier. But you're right, and it's a problem that we, you know, adventurers face quite a lot.
And especially if you're, you know, on like a multi-day exped, and if you're recording it as well, especially with high quality broadcast quality stuff, you know, that kind of equipment can be quite draining. So you need something that's going to charge stuff up again.
What do you suggest?
Well, I'm looking at this this Anker power bank. And it's got a lot of good reviews. It's reasonably priced, I think, at £37. And so, you know, something like that, depending on what your budget is, but something like that will do you, certainly at our level, where we're going out for a weekend or maybe a few days, a week at the most, just to sort of keep topped up, keep in the loop. Not that you need to be constantly updating your social media if you're out doing these activities, but in case of emergency, it's always good to have contact. Not to mention that, but if you, as I said, recording something, whether you're running a YouTube channel or anything like that, whatever you're doing that you need to be recording this material, then you need to be able to make sure that that stuff's going to be working again tomorrow. So something like this power bank, a power charger, something like that, that's going to be solar powered. It's relatively inexpensive. It's lightweight. It packs in your kit. You can keep it waterproof, and it will keep all of your electronics up and running for when you need them.
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm not new to this power bank thing. I've got to say it's something that I've used quite a lot, and that's a lot of that's down to like you say, GPS stuff and you know, keeping phones charged and all the rest of it. Sorry, I've been rudely distracted by my wife walking in, which is
good heavens.
Yes, it's all right. Nice. And with that, we're going to cut the show. No, I'm joking. anyway, so yeah, it's and I carried three of them, I think, on the King Alfred's Way, just because for longer expeditions, that's probably what I'd look to carry. And that, you know, similar sort of things, you can get various sizes and different outputs. And they are brilliant. You can get solar powered ones, or you can get solar panels that plug into them to charge them on the go, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a really, really good way of keeping your stuff charged and ready to go. I'm going to take it a step further, though, because something I'm going to suggest to you, and this is something I've invested in recently, is so I actually got a portable generator. Now, not the sort with a pull cord and a petrol cap.
Oh,
this is a pre-charge, so similar sort of thing. It's a power bank, essentially, but it's on steroids. And the one I picked up is the All Powers portable generator, which is putting out 288 watt hours. Okay, it is a bit of a beast. Yeah, you can put 3-pin plugs into it, USB sockets. It's got a couple of lights on there. It does AC, it does DC. It's, you know, it's a really nice bit of kit.
Does it come with a hammer called Mjolnir?
You need a wheelbarrow to carry around. No, I mean, it's not something you'd want to stick in your day sack for long hikes. But if you're doing a bit of car camping, or you've got a base camp area where you know, you're a bit more remote and you still want to have that charging facility rather than using your smaller power bank. It's a really good way of doing it. So yeah,
that sounds fantastic.
Worth having a look at. They're a little on the pricey side, but you know what? I think they're worth it. So currently that's on the market at about £190. I'm gutted because I paid £250. It's come down in price. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, mate. BHS and Betamax all over again, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably have to explain that on another episode.
Put it in the notes.
Put it in the show notes. Yeah, absolutely. There we go. So power banks, yeah, brilliant. Excellent. What else we got?
I got two more. You're going to like this one.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. In fact, it's entirely possible you already have something like it, but it's the Kona French Press. It can brew a litre of your favourite beverage.
Nice.
Now, that could be coffee. It also says it can also make tea. But the point about this particular one is that it doesn't use electricity. It's some kind of witchcraft.
They'd love it
in Lincolnshire. But something like that, you know, whether you're a tea or coffee drinker, it doesn't matter. If you are of the caffeinated crowd, then you'll know there's nothing quite like starting the day with your favorite drink. And so something like that you can put into your pack. It's lightweight, it's durable, and in this case it doesn't use electricity. Something like that will be absolutely ideal, especially on a multi-day expedition, or like a weekend, you know, because how many times, you know,
is this something that you brew on a stove?
No, it's
pressure heated.
Yes, exactly. Pressure temperature, just one, the others alter. Yeah. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So yeah, I know that you're a bit of a coffee fiend these days. You like your
I do like a brew. Yeah.
You like your brew? Yeah, that's fine.
Yep. Yeah.
So I thought I'd chuck that one in for you, mate.
Okay. Oh, nice one. Yeah. Nice one. Well, if that's not your cup of tea. Here we go. Something I got last Christmas was the AeroPress Go, which is you need hot water. So I'm already feeling inadequate in that respect, that I can't make hot water just by using this thing. But actually, it's a really, really good bit of kit. So specifically for coffee, bit of powdered coffee. It packs down nice and neat and comes in its own cup. So,
Yes, I think I'm familiar with this. I believe my wife took one out to exercise earlier this year. They are a fantastic bit of kit. Again, it's lightweight, it's durable, it's all those boxes. And you know, if you've got that and you can get your hot wets on first thing in the morning, start the day properly like a civilized human.
That's right. Yeah, it just makes the day go better for everyone.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
Cool. What else we got? Come on. I'm getting greedy now. I know I'm a brat. Right. So,
all right.
Yeah.
I got one more.
All right.
Do you not want to share yours? Because I can go with this.
Go with it.
All right. Socks.
Oh, socks, yeah.
Socks, yeah. Socks, it's Christmas. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
It's tradition. Right? It's not Christmas unless you get some socks.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, I mean, something that's durable, something that when it gets wet is going to keep your feet warm and wick away that moisture as practicably as possible. And whether that's, whether you're camping or whether you're hiking, whether you're out in the field in any sort of environment, when your feet get wet and they stay there, it's like your entire mind just sinks slowly down your body and ends up in a soggy heap in your feet, because it's all you can think about. This is all I could ever think about.
Yeah.
And so having a decent pair of socks, I mean, we could probably do at least a feature of an episode on footwear, about talking about, you know, lacing styles, different styles of boot versus walking shoe versus and socks and combinations.
Yeah.
But the socks are one of the key features. And so I'm going to go with socks. A decent pair of good quality
wool.
Wool. Well, some of the some of the blends are also very good.
But
again, you've got to shop around, I think, in that respect, because you can pay an awful lot of money. But again, you know, like we say here at Mud Island Adventures, you know, always do your research.
Yeah, and, totally.
You know, but a good pair of socks, got to be.
Agreed.
It's Christmas.
Agreed. Yeah, I like it. I do like a nice pair of socks. So I've got one more.
Go on.
And I think it's again, it's a brat gift. You know, I like my gadgets and I like it at the upper end of the price spectrum. So, but I want to talk about GPS watches. Now, I've been lucky in that I've had a GPS watch since.
They invented GPS?
So my first one was a Suunto that I had.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was like wearing the Death Star on my wrist. And, you know, I had to physically link it into a computer to upload any information onto the website. But, you know, it was really good at tracking. It did what it did, and it was really good at what it did. So I can't knock it at all. But things have moved on since then. Since this is a shameless plug to Garmin, and I will
go for it.
I will, all day, because my first real experience of using Garmin products was in 2007, where I was gifted very kindly by a company, a local company that unfortunately is no longer trading. But this is probably why they kept giving stuff away. But they gifted me a Garmin GPS Map 60C, which at the time was
cutting edge.
So it was a color mapping. Yeah, you know, incredible stuff back in 2007. And I was gifted that because I was serving out in Afghanistan at the time. Yeah, took that out to Afghan with me and used it to great effect while I was out there, both for navigation and for other reasons. But yeah, it was the love affair with Garmin started there. And since then, I've been using Garmin products. Now, the current product that I'm using is the Fenix 3HR, which anyone who knows anything about Garmin equipment will realize that we're a little way ahead of that now. I think, where are we? The Garmin 6?
I think Fenix 6, yep.
Yeah, the Fenix 6HR,
yep.
Or the Sapphire, something like that.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm a little way behind the times, but do you know what? It holds up, and it's a really good bit of kit. So I use it for tracking all my outdoor activities, actually switched over to the Garmin Edge 520, which is a cycle computer. So I use that for all my cycling, navigation, and tracking. But it links seamlessly in with my heart rate monitors. The Fenix 3 gives me heart rate all day, the step counts, all the rest of it. So it allows me to track where I am in terms of my recovery from anything, you know, really
including
good
Christmas. Yeah.
Well, that's going to take probably till March to recover from.
Yeah. Fair. That's a fair estimate. No, I think that's great. I mean, I've got, I've actually got a Garmin as well. It's the Solar Instinct. I've only had it a few months on, even though I'm still recording all of my training sessions into a notebook with a pencil. It's so 20th century, but I love it. And I have been finding this watch extremely beneficial. I find it very useful for, you know, tracking activity, whether that's just like steps or, you know, floors going up and down. Not to mention, it's got a vague idea what my blood pressure and heart rate are doing. So
yeah,
and it's got all those other features as well that you can, you know, you can, it will track your workouts, it will track your cardio, it will map things and everything. So yeah, I mean, I'm a convert. I've got to say, it's an extremely useful tool for training, especially when it comes to the cardio.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you've got an idea of where your heart rate is at, and we were talking about this the other day, weren't we? If you've got an idea where your heart rate is at, perceived effort, and you know how that sort of feeling, then you can you can really sort of make a lot of inroads. I mean, for a very long time, in my 20s and 30s, it was basically go hard or go home. You know, do that fizz, push yourself. Oh, I'm sorry, did you break? Yeah, pick yourself up and carry on. 25 years later, that's a really bad idea. I've come to this realization. And so something like the smartwatches, recording your training sessions, you know, and most important of all, listening to your actual body and what it's telling you is it's really important stuff. So yeah, I'm a big fan of them. Yeah.
It's something that has revolutionized my training, certainly. And like you, having come up through the military system, you know, starting 20 odd years ago, where it was go hard or go home. Nowadays, a lot of my heart rate training, or heart rate training, is where it's at. And you know, I couldn't do it without this. So, yeah, if you're going to get one bit of fitness equipment for 2022, I would suggest a fitness watch of some sort, a GPS watch, something to track your heart rate and record your routes for you.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, shameless plug for Garmin, I don't care.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, why not? If you like something.
That's right, you know. Yeah, absolutely. Cool, right. So that's about it. I think Santa's sack is well and truly stuffed, right?
Yes, it is.
Really and truly, the one thing that we need to discuss is our little armchair adventure, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Most assuredly. Yeah. Yes, we do. yes, we do. So I know you're about halfway through this particular book, I think. You're listening to it. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm doing the Audible version.
Okay.
It's replaced podcasts of late. And
okay. Cool. I actually read the actual book on actual paper with actual words printed on them, because I'm just old school.
You're
like that.
So 1983.
I know. I even paid cash for it. Can you believe that?
What, from a bookshop?
From a bookshop, yeah.
You had to go out.
I actually left the building, yeah. Mm. Shocking. But what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is Ross Edgeley's Blueprint. Now, we've featured Mr. Edgeley's work on the show before. The Art of Resilience, the World's Fittest book, has had a mention as well. So we're coming back to him in this latter part of his trilogy of books. Now, Ross Edgeley, for those of you who don't know, he's a sports scientist, but also he is an adventurer. He has done mad things like climb the equivalent height of Mount Everest on a rope in 24 hours. He's done a triathlon carrying a tree. He swam the entire coast of the United Kingdom. Okay. The man is not unfit. And the man,
he's not right in the head either.
No, there's an argument there. I mean, but it's a cool not right in the head, you know. It's got to be said. He's just one of those fantastic British mad adventurer characters that's going to crop up, you know, once every other generation.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we're fortunate that we've got, both Ross Edgeley, and we've also got, you know, Runoff Fiennes as well. But for Ross Edgeley, this Blueprint book is his latest work. It's been out a couple of months now, but it's absolutely fantastic. Essentially, what it is, there's a narrative story in there about how he coaches an open water swim team of complete novices, and at the same time recovers from that epic swim around the UK, because whenever we engage in repetitive activity, in his case swimming 12 hours a day, there's going to be a physiological adaptation. That's what sport and exercise science is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But in his case, he then had to readapt his anatomy and physiology to being back as a land-based mammal, as all humans are. Mm-hmm. So, the story runs parallel to that. And at the end of this, it follows his progress. And at the end of it, he's come to this this conclusion as a sports scientist and an adventurer that the 12-month macro cycle can be of a year can be broken down into further mesocycles over a three-month basis. And what it gives you is this training plan, a blueprint that you can use through recovery, build, base, and peak for any and all activity and or sport. Sounds like a big thing. It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Because, I mean, it's brilliant. That's all I can say. It's absolutely informed, because the genius of it is this, that you can take this and you can apply it to your cycling. I can take this and I can apply it to another activity, whether it's surfing, running, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever you're listening, you know, whoever you're listening whatever you're into and whatever you want to do, this blueprint does give you that opportunity to maximize your physical potential.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what I love about Ross Edgley, and don't get me wrong, the guy is a handsome, chiseled, absolute specimen of a guy, and I want to hate him with every fibre of my being.
Wow, I mean, you know, so were we once, so it's time to hand over the torch, I think.
Yeah, this guy's next level, dude. Oh,
I know. He's he's annoying like a Greek god, isn't he? But yeah.
But I can't dislike the man. He was described by Eddie Hall, the beast.
Yeah.
Those of you that don't know who Eddie Hall is, he's a former world's strongest man, and I think still the only guy to have deadlifted 500 kilos.
Yeah.
You know, and he describes Ross Edgley, they're good mates, and he describes Ross Edgley as a human version of a Labrador.
Yeah.
You know, he is just constantly, he's a bundle of energy, you know, and he's an incredibly likable character, but superbly tuned to his own body and the way it works and how he can improve it. And yeah, you know, it's, I mean, the things he's done.
Mm. Oh, I know.
Go and check, you know, please, if you don't know who this guy is, if we haven't sparked your interest before, go check him out, because he is he's on another level.
Completely.
Possibly from another planet.
I was about to say yes, not of this earth, but he is here with us at the moment, so go check
him
out.
Yeah, let's make the most of it and learn from him while we can.
Yeah.
Now the thing I really, really like about the book is and I've read over the years I've read books about endurance sports, and I've read books, you know, and there's some really interesting stuff out there. But everything with Blueprint is based around the human sort of drive to adventure.
Yes.
And I think that's what makes it so pertinent to us, is that it's not just about being the fittest, the fastest, the strongest, the best at your sport. It's about how doing or following the blueprint will aid you in adventure. And this is what it comes back to what we've spoken about in the past with am I adventure ready? He just puts it in a much better way than I think we ever could.
Yeah,
or certainly a more
structured plan as well.
Yes, definitely a more scientific version of the truth. So, yeah, if you get the chance, make the chance. You know, whether you read it, whether you listen to it, get amongst it, get a copy of Blueprint, and add that if it's not already on your Christmas list, it should be. Go and buy it for yourself. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and absolutely. It's a fantastic book and it's a fantastic premise. So that's us, I think, isn't it?
That's cool. Yeah, well, yeah. I don't. We...
Do you got any anything quick else?
Well, you know what? The quick win.
Oh, go for it.
Well, the weekend win. Yeah. I haven't really thought about this time, but I'm Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Boxing Day and New Year's Day. I'm planning on getting cold and wet.
Okay.
And I'm going to urge everyone else to, you know, around the country to try and do that. Whether it's an again, there's always the urgency, particularly with recent events a couple of months ago with the storms and the really sad loss of life. Where a group of paddleboarders got into some difficulty and they didn't all make it. I'd urge everyone to err on the side of caution and safety in this. But do you know what? One of the things I will definitely be following in 22 is some Wim Hof type
breathing.
Some of the breathing, the cold immersion, all the rest of it. Yeah. So. And again, something Ross Edgley is extremely into. So I'm going to go and get cold and wet on Boxing Day and probably New Year's Day as well.
Sounds like fun.
Let's all go.
Yeah.
Let's go get wet.
Send Fox and Vids, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Check out the Instagram.
I'll quiver with anticipation while you quiver with the cold.
With that reminder of the other social media channels that we're using, guys and girls, so we're still live and kicking on Instagram. I haven't posted for a little while, but it's been dark and cold and, you know, the blah. I really should have done. Although I really enjoyed a cold ride down in the New Forest with a couple of friends the other week, so that was great. I'll be posting more on that coming up soon, and also on Facebook with the if you feel the need, come and join us on the Mud Island Adventures group on Facebook. I think we're sitting pretty at about 270 members on there.
Up there,
you know, there's some. We're growing the knowledge. We're growing the hive mind.
Yes, we are.
And that's what it's all about: is sharing that information, that knowledge, and helping people. Because we don't know everything. Lee and I, we might pretend. We're getting on now. You know, it's not all about us. check it out. It's a really good source of info. Cool. Yeah.
And just remember, if you are going to post on the website on the Facebook page, the stupid questions are the ones that we don't ask. I've said this before, and I will keep saying it. If you're new into an environment, it's easy to sort of prefix any query with, I know this is probably daft, but it's not. If you don't know and you're asking, that alone negates any daftness that you might feel, okay? Because you've got enough self-awareness that you know that you need to learn, and so therefore ask the questions. And at Mud Island Adventures, like I said, it's the hive mind, Garrick said, we're there. Okay, so just ask away. We can point in direct resources, or we can, you know, answer the questions ourselves. But that page is a absolute goldmine of information and experience on a multitude of different outdoor activities. So come join the community and ask your questions there.
Happy days. Yeah. Let's get that done. All right.
Okay.
Okay, dude. Well, man, that's it.
Yeah.
The first year of Mud Island Adventures podcast.
I know. And we're done already. We barely just started.
Oh, it feels like only several months ago. started
back in April.
Yeah. Crikey. We're going to do more next year.
Yes, we are. Bigger, yeah, we are going to be better next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And more regularity.
Possibly. Yeah. Some interesting things coming up next year. We've still got to do the triple challenge.
Yes, we do.
I say we. I've still got to do my triple challenge.
I will support that. 100%.
Hoofing, yeah. So, that's still, the planning's still ongoing and the preparation is definitely ongoing. So it is definitely going to happen. It's just a case of getting there and making the time to do it. On top of that, I'm also going to be riding the North Coast 500, hopefully sometime in May.
Fantastic.
Just waiting on confirmation of dates. I'm doing that as part of a bigger group. For those of you that haven't heard before, haven't followed the Instagram, I've been working quite closely with Cycle Britain, which is a cycle touring company based up in the Peaks. And I'm going to be bringing 5 weekends of training to Salisbury Plain. So an area steeped in history. It's the largest chalk grassland in Western Europe. And it is going to be a weekend of learning about how to set up your bike, how to pack your gear, what to take, how to handle the bike. You know, I'm going to share all that experience over the course of a weekend, over 5 weekends. So check out Cycle Britain give them a follow on Instagram, check out the website, and if it's something you're into, book some dates. There's courses running up and down the country. So in particular, you can go with me personally down here in Salisbury Plain. We're looking forward to that. Who knows what other adventures are going to come next year? It's going to be banging. It's going to be epic. I really hope it is.
There's going to be lots of things going on next year, and we're going to make most of them happen. So join us on the FB page, listening to the podcast. If this is the first one you're listening to, welcome to the party. But
why?
We do have.
Why is it the first one you're listening to?
I know.
Damn it, go back and listen to the others. The
material as well, you know, back in the back catalogue. So go check that out. And whilst we adjourn for our Christmas break and into the new year, we'll see you all again in the very early new year.
Give us your wise words, Lee.
Oh, okay. If you insist. Can I do the Yoda voice? No, we don't want to do the Yoda voice.
No, let's not do that.
Okay. Just checking. Adventure. We can search for it, or it can find us. Whatever its shape or size, whatever its duration, whatever challenges it throws down in our path, we must rise up to meet it. And if we cannot beat it, we must not be beaten by it, even in defeat. But in victory, there lies the reward that no medal or accolade can provide, because it comes from within. And after the adventure, home. So I hope that wherever your home is this year, you are settling into it for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year with all of your friends and family.
Dude, love it. Yeah. Couldn't have put it better myself, and I won't. But yeah, Lee,
yes.
Have a great Christmas, mate. We'll be in touch.
You too, buddy.
Doubt. But to everyone out there in podcast land and everyone in the Mud Island, we wish you the most amazing Christmas with family and friends. Please stay safe over the Christmas period. Let's try and stay healthy. I know this pandemic has got everyone a bit rattled right now, but we're going to make it.
Yes,
and we'll make it together. So have a really great Christmas, a fantastic new year. And we hope to catch up with you soon, either on Insta or on Facebook, or just listening on here. Either way, drop us a line. Let us know you're listening or taking part somehow. All that remains is, I think for the last thing to do in 2021 is to go. Do. And then tell us about it.
Oh, absolutely. We were so close.
We'll get that in 22. Okay. That's great.
Yeah, right. There's a goal. Put it on the whiteboard.
Take care, everyone. Have a great Christmas.
Merry Christmas, all.
Bye-bye.